The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Alan Bradley's new book tells the extraordinary story of a serial fraudster who moved between Ireland and the UK for more than a decade, assuming multiple identities and leaving a trail of devastated families, duped institutions and exploited charities in her wake. Through meticulous investigation and first-hand testimony, an award-winning documentary filmmaker, Alan Bradley, reveals how Samantha Cooks, better known to many as Carrie Jade Williams, weaponized trust, disability and vulnerability to deceive everyone from young parents to universities and even the Irish state itself. Alan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us how the story of this convicted serial fraudster began? I mean, an ordinary schoolgirl in Gloucester, how does she become something else?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question, and it's what I've spent the last 3 years, I suppose, trying to figure out. How does somebody from a background like Samantha Cooks end up doing what she's done? There's no obvious answer to it. She had a really nice upbringing by all accounts. Her family and friends have kind of told me that even back in her early days as a child, there was always this propensity to lie, make up stories, kind of live in fantasy worlds. She loved reading, she loved storybooks, and it was quite harmless at a young age. In secondary school, the girls in her secondary school kind of got to understand, take everything Samantha says with a pinch of salt.
Okay, a fantasist.
Yes. But I suppose at the age of 19, she had a baby daughter, Martha, who tragically passed away.
Now, the circumstances were unfortunate, to say the least.
Yeah, on the day Martha was due to be given up for adoption, Samantha brought Martha to bed and fell asleep, unfortunately, in the bed with Martha. And when she awoke, Martha had suffocated by a pillow. So a very tragic situation. And it seems after that, Samantha's life kind of spiraled. And in 2011 was the first time she was convicted in the UK of surrogacy fraud. So sort of, it seems to be from there things took a darker turn.
Now, tell me about the surrogacy fraud. What was she trying to do? Was she going to carry a baby for somebody else and charge them for it and then did not?
Exactly, yeah. So a really lovely couple I met from North Allerton in the UK, Katie, Taylor and Luke, they were struggling to have children and came across Samantha. She seemed like the answer to all their problems. They were delighted. They paid her their life savings and unfortunately Samantha didn't go through with it. It seems she was leading them on and she was convicted of that.
Did she serve time?
No.
Why not?
She was given a suspended sentence, and I suppose the death of her daughter was used as mitigating circumstances at the time.
Now, one of the most tragic characters in your whole narrative is a man that we'll call Joe. It's not his real name. Tell me about what happened to Joe.
Yeah, Joe's story actually still lives with me after he told me. I was stunned after it. Joe met Samantha in 2011 when they were studying together, and they formed a relationship. Things moved quite quickly. She was amazing. He fell deeply in love. They had two children. A lot of things happened that are outlined in the book with those two children. But what happened in the end, unfortunately for Joe, is it was decided that Samantha couldn't care for those children and they were removed from her custody. So for Joe to have them in his life, he needed to cut off contact from Samantha, which he did. Unfortunately, she reeled him back in. He did go and visit her when she was in Ireland. Social services were made aware of that and through a process, his children were removed from his care and given up for adoption. So to this day, they've lived their whole lives without their father, and it's a very sad situation for him.
Now, tell me about the different identities that she took on over quite a short period of time, really.
Yeah, so once she came to Ireland in 2013, and Edenderry was the first place she came to, she started there, and for the next more than a decade, she went from town to town all over Ireland with different identities and different aliases everywhere she went. So there's a host of false names all over the country that she used.
Samantha Black was one of them. What did she do as Samantha Black?
Samantha Black was 2019. She was in Galway. She was living with a family there. Claire was her name, a mother of four. And she took Samantha in looking for an au pair. And there she just really pull the rug on Claire, I would say. What Claire didn't realise until after Samantha had left is Samantha had spread rumours in the local community that Claire was a terrible, unfit mother, that her children were deeply neglected, and she was actually going as far as to collect donations for these children and toys and books from the local community, which really devastated Claire, because you can imagine as a mother, for people in your community to think that of you when it's totally false was really detrimental to her.
So she blackened Claire's name to the point that Claire could not sleep easy in her bed until she knew that Samantha Cooks had been convicted.
Yeah, and quite a few years passed before that happened. And I suppose she didn't understand Samantha's motive. I think that's what's unsettled her the most. She didn't understand why anybody would do that.
Jane Harris then?
Jane Harris turned up in Wexford, and she was a lovely elderly man. Jim Ryan let her rent a shop from him, and she was going to do all kinds of things there, including a 3D printing business. Unfortunately, none of that happened, of course. But what happened for Jim is once she decided to leave, because she was on the run at this stage and she'd been outed in the media, Jim received loads of threatening emails looking for financial compensation that she said he owed her. You know, he's an elderly man in his 80s. It took quite a toll on him. He was very stressed and worried about it. Luckily, he did confide in his adult children and they kind of supported him through it, and he didn't end up giving her any money, and she did eventually go away. But it put him under severe strain.
Now, you mentioned that she'd been exposed, she'd been outed. Carrie Jade Williams was the key.
Yeah, Carrie Jade Williams was probably her undoing, really. She got too big, I think. She perhaps got too confident.
What was she doing as Carrie Jade Williams?
Well, she was posing as a terminally ill, award-winning author. She claimed to have Huntington's disease, which is a very degenerative illness, neurological. She claimed that she was living with this. She won a Financial Times Bodley Essay Award writing about this condition that she had. And the world was at her feet. I mean, she was on national platforms talking about it. She was on TikTok all over there, thousands of followers. But unfortunately, that's where, when people started to join the dots of who she really was, it all blew up in her face.
Now, she was Sadie Harris, she was Jane Harris, Carrie Jane Williams, Samantha Black, all of these people. She targeted those who would most likely have empathy.
Yeah, for me, that's something that really stood out for me in the story. Every time she zoned in on empathy, she zoned in on either vulnerable people who were in situations where they were searching for something, or her stories that she constructed were built around empathy themselves, whether she claimed she was an adoptee seeking her birth mother, whether she claimed to have a terminal illness, whether she claimed to have a tragic backstory. And I think that worked really well for her in talking to empathetic people. People don't question these things. You automatically sympathize, and it would feel cruel to question what she's saying to you.
So targeting all sorts of institutions, obviously our own social services paid her out money, which accrued to, what, 60,000 over a period of time?
Yeah, 60,000 euro. And that's what she got convicted of in March 2025 and what she's serving jail time for now in Limerick Women's Prison. She was claiming disability welfare fraudulently when she was posing as having Huntington's disease. But, you know, it's amazingly impressive that she managed to hoodwink the Irish state in quite an elaborate way. It's not easy to get those benefits, and she managed to do it while being perfectly healthy.
She also targeted academic institutions. What did she do?
Yeah, so she attended two different national universities under false names, and she took disability discrimination cases against both of them. We know for sure one of those institutions settled a financial sum with her of about 4,000 euro, and, you know, the president of the university agreed to issue her an apology. Bearing in mind here, of course, she has no disability and she was not terminally ill. So it's shocking, really.
And she saw opportunities where others might not see them. For example, trying to get housing in Kerry, those kind of things. There was nothing that she wouldn't try on.
Nothing she wouldn't try. And I suppose that's where empathy rears its head again. She would create these narratives as to why she deserved this housing that would be very powerful. Like, she wrote to the Taoiseach, all kinds of ministers, claiming that she was seeking euthanasia abroad because the Irish state had failed her so badly, this woman with a terminal illness. You know, really emotive stuff that would pull on your heartstrings, and of course, totally false.
It's extraordinary that she would do this with impunity, knowing that the whole thing was a fabrication, and yet she'd write to someone as powerful as the Taoiseach, wanting him to be some sort of ambassador for her case to the authorities.
I suppose, though, Pat, you have to bear in mind, she's getting away with this for well over a decade, time and time again, with very little repercussion. Here or there, she slipped up and she got small, you know, cases were taken against her, but generally she got away scot-free. Mm. So I think she just grew too big.
Now, how did it all fall apart? I mean, it's down to really how public people can be and how social media can allow networks to develop that undid her.
100%, yeah. And I suppose what's lovely in a way is what happened is the victims of Samantha Cooks joined together through social media and then through a WhatsApp group that's still very active. And it's all kinds of people in there, but mostly mums with children with special additional needs who she kind of targeted. And they formed a real bond, and they were the ones really who kept pushing and pushing this out there because they didn't want what happened to them to happen to somebody else. So, you know, I think they are quite vindicated now with the publicity it's got and also the fact she is serving time in prison.
And it all began to unravel. I remember hearing it on Liveline, for example, the unraveling of the story. So this is the same woman again, different name, doing whatever. She became basically publicly outed, I suppose.
Yeah, publicly outed in mainstream media, all over social media. But what shocked me is she still continued after that. That was late 2022. 2023, she's in Salbridge, living as a nanny, Sadie Harris, in a community, a new family. Same stuff again, until someone who had listened to a podcast about her at the school gates happened to Google this woman, Carrie Jade Williams, notices, hey, that picture is Sadie Harris, this family's nanny. And they joined the dots again. And yet again, she fled.
She fled. Now, she is serving time for the social welfare fraud. But for the rest of the people that she victimized, is there any justice for them? Or do they have to go about taking civil cases in order to get any kind of retribution?
Well, I suppose for them, a lot of them actually went to court the day she was being sentenced for the welfare fraud. And I think, I don't want to speak for them, but they would have told me that seeing her sentence for that felt like some sort of justification, you know, some sort of justice for what they went through as well. Also, none of them are really gunning for her. You know, none of them want to tear her down. They're not coming from it from an angry place. They just want her to stop what she's doing. Samantha was in their lives. They really liked her. Their children loved her. It's really hard for them to switch those feelings off too. Like, some of them have quite a lot of empathy for her. They just want her to stop doing the harm that she's doing.
So the question is, could she start all over again? I mean, there's nothing there except this social media network now that might out her. But to those who are not connected into that world, they could fall prey to her again.
Yeah, and I suppose she has been diagnosed with pathological lying, and experts would say that that's a really, really difficult condition to treat, almost impossible, particularly if the person themselves doesn't want to engage in that. Now, that's not to say, I hope Samantha will, of course, turn her life around and do something more positive, because she's a very able person. She was a great writer, although she was presenting something as fact that in fact was fiction. It was good writing.
Like, so she could make her fortune as a novelist if she left the lies behind and just confined them to the pages of fiction.
Exactly. Do something positive with her talent. Yeah.
All right. Well, the book is a fascinating book. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. Unmasking Samantha Cooks, it's called. The Many Lives of a Serial Fraudster. It's available everywhere now. And its author, Alan Bradley. Alan, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.